Chapter 29. Aspen. All around Aspen, hulking monstrosities lurked in the dimness of the newly repaired tent. Several bone golems had been damaged by the sun when the people the cultists had coerced into serving them had suddenly been freed by Aspen's winnow. They had destroyed tents and attacked anything that moved in their desperate attempt to flee. Though the rebellion had quickly been quashed, the damage was done, and Akuji had spent much of the time since repairing his hideous dolls. Aspen closed his eyes, shutting out the gruesome sight, and focused on Rouge's sweet voice as she eagerly demanded, "What? How does he do it? Can we stop him?" He nearly chuckled, imagining the expression of excitement on her face, then winced as the motion cracked the scabs on his face. Akuji had not been pleased that his hooked fish had managed to strike back, and there were few parts of Aspen's body that weren't injured in some way. "Yes," he sent back, lying still where he was tied to a post in the middle of the big tent. "It'll be tricky, but I think we can do it. The important thing is the timing." The girl sounded intent as she replied, "Okay. When and how? And how do we get you back?" Aspen would have shaken his head if he could. Sorrow rose up in his throat, nearly choking him. "You don't. In order to protect refuge, I have to die." "What?" Rouge practically screeched. "Heck no. No way. Bad plan." In the back of his mind, Aspen could hear Silas' choked little sobs. When he'd explained this to Kor, the greater goat had been furious, and then he'd gone silent. Silas had gone to check on him once she stopped crying, and reported that he was just sitting in the barn with nuisance on his head and the unicorns pressed up against his sides, and whenever anyone else came near, he bared his teeth at them. "It's the only plan, Rouge."
"No.
Look, go through it slowly. We'll come up with something else. Like father, like daughter." That had been Mott's reply too, almost word for word. It hadn't been too hard to convince the big man to bring out the diamond, since he, too, had already realized that there was some time limit on its natural decay. The difficult part had come when Aspen told Mott to run, leaving Aspen behind. The warrior had refused absolutely, and the result had been his death. Aspen clenched his teeth painfully against the memory of Mott's murder. It was only because he knew his friend would revive, only temporarily damaged by his demise, that Aspen had been able to resist using the last move he had to make. Instead, he had had to watch as the bone golems shredded the man he respected. "Listen then. During the Siege of Bright, it was not uncommon for those with enough money or influence to break the line and attempt to flee. These were mostly petty nobility, though some few wealthy merchants also tried. I can only guess what happened to the merchants, but at least some of the nobles fell into Akuji's hands." He used the link, spiritual, magical, symbolic, whatever it may be, between them and the country they were meant to serve to convince the Bluestones that those entering were the nobles he caught. So the Bluestones never fell or failed, but nobles are allowed to use violence in self-defense, even when surrounded by the stones. Akuji placed those nobles in a situation where they needed to defend themselves, then made his troops and monsters an extension of those nobles by using their blood. Rouge was silent, then whispered, "You mean he tortured them, right? Is that what he's going to do to you? He used Jiminy and Lionel to lure out someone more important, and now he's going to torture you so his troops can attack refuge." Aspen sighed as deeply as he could with at least 3 cracked or broken ribs. "That's right. I told him I'm not a noble anymore, and he just laughed. I don't know if being on the council is good enough, or if Sarave did something else without telling me, but apparently, I will work very well for Akuji's purpose."
"Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
We can work with this." Rouge's voice became a little rougher, and he pictured her pacing and tugging at her hair, as she did when she was thinking. The sun would still be up, and the light would shine on her black braids, glinting from the colorful beads woven through the thick strands. Was she still wearing her sneaking around gear? It would be black then, dark against skin the color of burnt sugar. He was pulled out of his desperate attempt to be somewhere else when cool hard bones pinched his jaw, yanking his head around.
"Wake up, Yorgas."
Akuji's voice was a little weaker now, drained from his efforts with the bone golems, and Aspen felt cold, painful tendrils of magic sink into his flesh from each point where the bones pressed into his living flesh. Aspen blinked open his eyes reluctantly, aware by now that if he tried not to look, the Lich Lord would only drain him more until he gave in. Akuji's skull was bare inches from Aspen's face, and if the undead lord had still breathed, the breeze would have brushed Aspen's skin. Even as Aspen watched, the red flame flickering deep in Akuji's eye sockets grew stronger, taking on a hint of gold.
"Ah," the Lich Lord said in satisfaction. "That's better. I think you're actually stronger than you were when I took you the first time."
The hard bones of his fingers spasmed and then released, allowing Aspen's head to drop limply to the side. Aspen's body shook involuntarily as the agony of being slowly eaten away from the inside out abruptly ended.
"Still," the living skeleton said, almost to himself, "I need you as intact as possible. The stronger you are, the longer you'll last while my creatures destroy your pretty little city. Don't worry though, everything you are will be mine soon enough."
With that, Akuji spun away, his hands raised as he went to work on repairing a bone golem who was missing the upper third of its chest and one arm. Aspen shuddered on the ground, bile burning his throat as he felt the weakness growing in his limbs. This was not the first time Akuji had made such a statement, and Aspen wondered if the foul creature even remembered the other times. Some essential part of him seemed to be missing this time. Aspen remembered the times Akuji had come to his cell outside Bright. Then the Lich Lord had seemed as human as Aspen himself. A complex and intelligent creature who had simply given up his flesh in exchange for a never-ending existence. Now though, he seemed hollow in essence as much as fact. Empty of that spark that made him more than the puppet of an evil god. It was this emptiness that gave Aspen a spark of hope. He dared to wonder if, perhaps, Chester was truly still lingering there, in Akuji's soul. Without him, was Akuji the same as a zombie or a ghoul? These monsters were powerful and dangerous, yes, but they had no intelligence or driving force beyond the command of their master, or the lingering urges of their almost forgotten lives. If Aspen was correct, and he devoutly prayed that he was, then Akuji would have to refresh his link with the Soul Gem soon. Aspen had expected that the Lich Lord would use the gem as soon as it was back in his skeletal fingers, but instead Akuji had set the black stone into a silk pouch and hung it around the vertebrae of his neck. "Okay, wait," Rouge's voice reached him again, and he closed his eyes, settling back into his fantasy of freedom.
"Why do you have to die? Don't we need to save you?"
"Yes,"
Silas squeaked frantically.
"We need to free you."
Aspen rolled his head to one side, peering out through swollen eyelids to contemplate the dozen or more squelching golems surrounding him.
"I'm sorry," he said slowly.
"I'm sorry, Rouge.
I'm sorry, Silas.
There's no way."
Agitatedly, Rouge said, "I'm very sneaky. I can get in there and just—"
"No," Aspen said, "that's not what I mean."
The girl stopped, and he could picture the confused expression on her elfin features.
"What?"
"When I die," Aspen said, "Itai herself will come for me. If I time it at the same moment Akuji uses the Soul Stone, I think," he swallowed hard, firming his resolve.
"No, I'm sure.
I'm sure Chester and I can use the power of our deaths to drag Akuji with us to the Chaos Pool. With Itai herself here, there is no way Akuji can avoid her gaze, and she has been waiting for him for a very, very long time."
"Just," Rouge sounded like she was almost crying.
"Just pray.
I mean, you can still pray to Itai, right?"
"Anyone can.
The gods come when you talk about them.
Remember the thing with Tiff, I mean the god of trash? Shouldn't Itai be watching us right now?"
"Itai. Itai. Itai."
Silas' little voice joined in with the girls, and then the two were chanting the name of Aspen's former lady.
"Itai, Itai, Itai, Itai."
Tears trickled from Aspen's eyes, salt burning the raw flesh of his face, and he joined them, though it was a different name he called now.
"Gina," he thought.
"Gina, if you can hear me."
For an instant he thought he felt cool lips on his forehead, and the faintest scent of sun-warmed honeysuckle cleared the stench of death from his nostrils. Then it was gone, and he was alone again.
"This is a battle of God's children," he murmured as pain suffused him again.
"But if they actually faced each other directly, they would tear the world apart. We are their game pieces, and we must play the game. However much they may regret sacrificing a bishop, it is better than losing the game altogether." And he twitched the smallest of smiles, "I will see Lark again. It's not so bad." Silas screeched into his mind, her little voice suffused with the same bitter sorrow that had filled her when she learned of her mother's death.
"What about me?
Aspen, I'm still here. I need you too."
Aspen's mental picture of Rouge held the little bat tightly, comforting her as she contemplated the loss of the only parent she had left. He blinked his eyes open, the image even more painful than the reality that surrounded him.
As his gaze came into focus, he saw that Akuji was sitting on his throne of bones, skull tilted back, empty skull leaning against the twisted ribs and femurs that made up the back of the chair. One bony hand clutched at the silk pouch around his neck, and the glow within his skull was as dim and red as Aspen had ever seen it. Slowly, Akuji leaned forward, tipping the matte black stone from its hiding place. His clattering phalanges clenched around it, and Aspen knew the moment had come. "I'm sorry," he sent one more time. "I love you." "Aspen." Rouge and Silas both shouted. "Aspen, no." Aspen clutched at the short, unassuming cudgel still thrust into the leather belt around his waist. With a thought, he urged stick to change, and with a dull, sullen chime it did, extending one end into a short, straight sickle blade. Aspen raised the gleaming edge and did what he had to do. It hurt. Not the cut itself, the pain of which vanished among the hundred other small agonies that suffused his body. No, the worst was the sound of Silas and Rouge's voices growing fainter until they vanished entirely, swallowed up by the pounding rhythm of his heart like the waves of the ocean beating on the shore in his ears. His vision too dimmed, but he only kept his eyes open so he could watch Akuji as he pressed the soul gem into the hollow cage of his rib bones. When it was in the exact spot that Yorga's Penbrook had once pierced with Akuji's blood-soaked blade, the skeletal fingers opened. The black stone flickered, 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 then roared into brilliant black fire that subsumed everything. Aspen's eyes closed. Aspen. Yorga's. The two voices, so similar and yet so different, were the first thing he heard after his own heartbeat faltered into stillness. Aspen blinked open eyelids that felt entirely real, just as they had nearly a year before, the first time he died. Atai and Gina both stood there, hands clasped, light and dark, and smiled at him. For the first time he realized how alike their features were, though Gina's characteristic joy and Atai's solemnity usually concealed it as much as the differences in their pigmentation. Gina spoke first. "Are you certain this is what you want to do, Aspen?" Atai, whose faint smile was gone as if it had never been, said, "Yorga's. Are you ready to go?" Aspen shook his head, turning to look toward Akuji's bony throne. Everything around him was still. The golems were frozen mid-step, and Akuji's hand was still half within his ribcage, having just released the soul stone to its resting place. Turning back to the waiting deities, Aspen bowed his head. "I have one more thing to do, great goddesses. A friend of mine has lost his way, and I wish to guide him home." Gina clicked her tongue, looking melancholy. "Chester made his choice, Aspen. Akuji tempts, but he cannot force his will on his host. Chester longed for power and gave his soul in exchange for it." Aspen raised his hand. Even in this between time, the tattoos shifted, with metamorphosing creatures crawling amidst clouds of fog and twisting branches. "We all make mistakes, my goddess. Isn't that why you gave these to me? Detect evil, winnow, metamorphosis, resurrection, clarity." He touched each tattoo as he named it. The opportunity for someone who has chosen an error to see evil, leave behind their weakness, repent, change, and rise from the ashes. With each of these, you offer a chance to change and grow. He touched a tiny tadpole sprouting minute legs and swimming for a dangling leaf. "You allowed me a choice, a year gone, and gave me the ability to grant others that same gift. Is Chester not worthy of that opportunity?" Gina turned to look at Atai, who snorted in a very ungoddess-like manner. "I guide souls to their rest, sister. I do not force them there. Unless, of course," she turned gleaming ruby eyes to Akuji, "they seek to deny me my right. That one should have gone on to 100 lives, long since. As I said, I may not overstep my role, but if Yorgas can bring that soul into my reach at last, well." Atai shrugged fluidly, lean muscles sliding under charcoal skin. Gina hesitated, rainbow eyes swirling through a thousand shades of blue and purple. "I can grant you only one chance, Aspen. If Chester refuses the gift you offer, you must continue on your journey alone." Aspen knelt in the bloody dirt before his goddesses. "I understand, Your Holiness." Gina shook her head, laughing softly. "Gina, Aspen." Atai stepped forward and put a hand beneath Aspen's chin, lifting his gaze to meet her own. "Beware, Yorgas," the goddess of death and change murmured. "The gift of another god is not easily taken away. Akuji will be powerful there, and in the end, the decision cannot be yours." Gina too moved forward, gliding with the grace of a dancer. She set her hand on top of Aspen's head, ruffling his hair. "Go, Aspen, and do your best."
The last words were oddly simple, but they rang with memory. Flashes of vision swirled around him. He walked a strawberry blonde Moppet to school and leaned down to give her a hug and whisper those words. He waved to Birdie as she left for another day at the hospital, calling the same phrase after her. The blonde girl and Lark spun together until he was dizzy, and he heard a woman's contralto voice murmuring over and over. "You can do it. Just do your best. I love you." The world shattered. Black Shard's world and reformed, and he found himself once again in the strange dark hallways filling Akuji's soul gem. The passages were as empty as ever, and the only light was the silver-blue glow cast by the tattoos on his hand. Unlike his first visit here, though, he knew where he was, and he felt a burgeoning sense of urgency. What had he done to reach Akuji last time? "Oh. Akuji!" Aspen yelled, the word tearing from his throat in a burst of pain. "Akuji, you bastard! Face me." He took a step, and the empty path in front of him shook, perspective skewing until the passage was only a few yards long, with a great, yawning archway at the end. "Akuji," he yelled again, racing through the high stone bend. The throne room held only two living men. The columns and statues were gone, and in the midst of the emptiness was Akuji, his skeletal form easily 8 feet tall. At his feet, nearly entirely covered by Akuji's crimson cloak, was Chester. The former king's head and one hand were all that were visible, and Aspen only knew who this feeble remnant was because it could be no one else. "Chester," he gasped, feeling as though he'd received a kick to the chest. Was this all that was left? Was he already too late? The head rolled toward him, paper-thin eyelids fluttering open to reveal sunken, opaque eyes. The pale, dry mouth opened. "Yorgas," Chester rasped. Aspen took one shaky step forward, staring at the remains of his king. "Chester, what have you done?" Akuji's bony jaw clacked, and he reached down one skeletal hand to pull Chester from beneath the heavy robe. The stick-thin man dangled in the air from Akuji's grip on the crown of his head, looking like a broken stick puppet, and Akuji shook him. "This?" Rasping hollow laughter echoed from the vaulted ceiling. "Tell him, Your Majesty. What have you done?" A single thin tear trickled down Chester's emaciated cheek. "I just wanted freedom," he croaked. "Everyone always tells me what to do, who to be. Be a son, be a king, be a certain kind of king. Be a husband, be a father, carry on the family." His voice cracked and gave out. Akuji's skull cocked to one side. "It was strange," he said thoughtfully. "The others always wanted power. They were easy. So simple to promise them everything, and they never even asked what the price would be. This one, though," he shook Chester's dangling body. "Is that why you're still here? Why you plague me with your dreams whenever my attention wanders? I gave you the freedom you longed for. Freedom to do whatever you wanted." The hollow voice grew louder, and Akuji shook Chester again. "Why don't you give up?" Aspen took a cautious step forward, legs shaking. "He's a good man," Aspen said. He looked directly at Chester, trying to catch the faded eyes with his own, though he doubted if Chester could see anything anymore. "Chester, you were always a good man. You have a gift too. Your dioramas were miraculous." They were too. Chester had built perfect images of imaginary people going about imaginary lives, in meticulously crafted homes, castles, and villages. It was frivolous perhaps, but it was art, created by a master artisan who should have been lauded, not condemned. But a king was not an artist, and there was no one to be king but Chester. No one acceptable to the lords, and certainly no one acceptable to Chester's father. While Chester dreamed of creation, he was bound up in chains of expectation. It reminded Aspen of Sarave's description of her own struggles, except that Chester had never even tried to escape. Except once. One time, and a world was about to fall because of it. Aspen locked his eyes on Chester's, and for a moment he thought he caught a flash of the intelligent green gaze of the man with whom he had once played 100 quiet games of chess. "It's all right," Aspen said. "You did your best. Everybody makes mistakes." Memories of a young girl's teary brown eyes mingled with others, identical except for their deep blue shade, and Aspen continued. "But when you make mistakes, you have to do your best to fix them." "Chester," Aspen took another step forward, raising his glowing hand. "It's time to fix your mistakes." For a moment, the tableau hung there, like one of Chester's miniature scenes brought to life.
the towering skeleton gripping the limp form of the atrophied man in Aspen with his hand outstretched.
Akuji began to laugh. The sound echoed, and then echoes of the echo followed after, until a cacophony of laughter shook the room.
Akuji shook Chester's limp form again.
"This broken toy can't do anything.
Is that all you have, Yorgas Penbrook?
You came here with nothing but words?"
Aspen gritted his teeth and stepped forward again.
"It's not me you should be worried about, Akuji."
Chester's trembling, crabbed and knobby fingers closed around the bones of Akuji's wrist.
Where he gripped, the bone grew yellow and brittle.
Akuji's still echoing laughter mingled with a scream of outrage as he hurled Chester's body toward Aspen. Aspen easily caught the king's stick-like form and cradled him to his chest like a sick child. Chester looked up at Aspen, eyes clear and green once again.
"I'm not a failure?"
Aspen smiled.
"You've never been a failure. Who you are has always been good enough."
He looked up at Akuji.
"Now let's send this monster home."
Akuji roared. His sword, Death Eater, appeared in his bony fists, but the weight of it made the bones of the arm Chester had touched crack and pop like hot metal dropped into water, and the Lich Lord transferred it to the other hand, letting the damaged one dangle at his side.
Akuji clacked his yellowed teeth at Aspen and leapt forward.
Aspen dodged, falling heavily onto one side and rolling, still clutching Chester. The sword clashed down behind them, sending sparks and chipped stone into the air. Aspen looked around for some place to hide. The statues of Akuji's former victims had vanished, along with the pillars they had supported, and there was nothing nearby but darkness and the distant throne. Should he go back out into the hall? If they ran fast enough, could they escape, perhaps even draw Akuji out of the safety of his soul stone and into the open for a tie to harvest?
Aspen glanced behind himself as he spun away from another wild blow. The archway through which he'd entered had vanished, leaving behind only a smooth black stone wall.
The throne it was then.
Aspen ran.
Chester was no burden at all, and Aspen's long legs ate up the distance even as he zigzagged to avoid the constant flurry of attacks coming from behind.
Akuji never stopped his ranting, but Aspen tuned him out, intent only on reaching the dais topped by the high throne. When last Aspen had been here, Akuji had been seated on the throne, concealing most of it, and Aspen had simply assumed that it was yet another seat made of gold or bones, intended to impress or terrify.
It was wood. Simple but well-crafted, with a green velvet cushion to protect its occupant's fundament from the solid timber construction. It was clearly a throne, and not a simple seat, with a tall carved back and wide heavy arms. On the cushion rested a golden crown that Aspen knew well. The crown of Cordernel. Aspen had somehow managed to outrun the furious skeleton, who was stalking more than running as he swung his sword in deadly arcs. Taking the bare moment he had gained, Aspen lowered Chester into the seat. Thinking of Sarave, accepting new shackles for the sake of her child and her people, and then turning those shackles into bracelets that only enhanced her indomitable personality, Aspen leaned into Chester and murmured, "Fix your mistakes, but be yourself as you do it. Think of what you want, and then make it." He offered the gaping king a quirk of a smile and turned back to Akuji.
"You can't keep me from my own soul, you misbegotten ghoul who can't even figure out how to die," Aspen shouted, holding out his glowing hand while he opened his mind and gave a hard tug on one of the four glowing strands stretching away from his own bright inner light. To his immense relief, Stick appeared there, silver leaves chiming musically, driving away the persistent echoes of Akuji's madness. The soul-bound staff stretched until it was just taller than Aspen himself, and a gleaming argent blade extended from the top, arching over Aspen's head. Aspen swung the scythe, clasping the aspen wood handle in his offhand so he could guide the blade with his luminescent right. The edge left a gleaming trail in the air as it moved, and Akuji stumbled back a step. Behind him, Aspen heard a small gasp and then a choked sob. He dared not turn his head, but the sound of something heavy scraped wood, and Chester's voice rang out, somber but clear.
"Get out, Akuji," Chester said, voice gaining strength as he spoke.
"Get out of my body, out of my soul, and out of my kingdom.
Get out."
The blackness exploded.